Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for listening to this episode. A little quick background here. Kevin Harlan was the guest this week. It was scheduled 2 or 3 weeks ago. I had reached out to Kevin because he's calling the Super Bowl on Sunday on radio nationally for Westwood One. So I wanted to get him on to talk about what it's like to do the Super Bowl on radio. And then, so we were going to tape Tuesday on January 28th. Kevin on Sunday night, Monday morning, gets an assignment from TNT that he's going to be calling Tuesday's Clippers-Lakers game, and that is the first Laker game after just unimaginable tragedy involving Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, and seven other people that just dominated the news cycle there on Sunday. Just shocking turn of events. So Kevin, though, had to reschedule Tuesday and was kind enough to say he would tape on Monday. So we taped this Monday afternoon. It's one day after the tragedy, day before he's calling the Laker game, their first game after Kobe Bryant's just stunning death. And then so we spend half the podcast talking about that and then half the podcast talking about the Super Bowl. Obviously, you know, we go from something serious to something frivolous. But Kevin has both assignments. That's his week. So we covered both. So I greatly appreciate Kevin not canceling, which he could have done, and I would have understood because he was not scheduled to call the Clipper-Laker game on Tuesday. So we're getting this out early, and if you're listening to this past Tuesday, the game already happened. We still have a full probably 30 minutes or so, 20 minutes or so on the Super Bowl, so there's still something here. So again, that's Kevin Harlan coming up. Quick note. In the archives, if you missed it last week, Brent Musburger was on the podcast with Chris Long, not with, separately. Brent talked about the Super Bowl, prop bets, Vegas, great stories about how he used to sort of get inside info to win this national anthem prop bet. And then Chris Long, former NFL star, came on and we went in depth and discussed the Aaron Hernandez docuseries on Netflix that a lot of people have watched and been discussing. 2 weeks ago, Kurt Menefee, who will do the pregame show for Fox on Super Bowl Sunday, was on to talk about that. So if you missed either of those interviews, go into the archives, give those a download and a listen. If you're not a subscriber to this podcast, please subscribe. And if you can rate and review, that helps tremendously. Subscribe is really the most important thing. All right, let's right now get to a man who has a very busy week coming up, Kevin Harlan. All right, joining me now, he was scheduled to be on this podcast this week all along because he's calling the Super Bowl on February 2nd for Westwood One. And I appreciate him keeping the commitment because now he has another big assignment this week, which we'll get into. And he is Kevin Harlan from TNT and CBS and Westwood One. Kevin, how's it going?
Jimmy, it's going great. Thank you for having me on. And always enjoy your column and your podcast. I listen and I read. So I'm a big fan of yours. And thanks for having me on again.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. That means a lot. This is the second time I've had you on. And I had reached out to you a couple of weeks ago about getting you on this week because you do have the Super Bowl on Sunday. And then obviously on this past Sunday, just an unmanageable tragedy with Kobe Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter Gianna, seven other people in the helicopter crash. And the Lakers' first game now is Tuesday of this week against the Clippers in L.A. on TNT. And you're going to have that game and call it. So this becomes quite a week for you. I guess let's just start. How did you learn of the unbelievable news this past Sunday?
I was doing a college game for CBS with Jim Spanarkle in Bloomington, Indiana, with Maryland and the Indiana Hoosiers. And late in the game, and I couldn't tell you the exact time, but a couple minutes left in the game, in a very close game, Jim got a text from a buddy of his on the West Coast and said, "Hey, I just heard Kobe was in a plane crash," and that's all it said. And he showed it to me during a commercial break. We looked at each other and go, "God, it didn't." And then we got back to our game because we're in the middle of a tight game. And then the game continued. We were down to the final couple seconds, a huge Maryland turnaround and a comeback win on the road, which is tough in the conference. And is almost at the time we're signing off the air, he flipped another text to me that showed that reports are that Kobe Bryant has been in a helicopter crash and is dead unconfirmed reports, and on the report went. And so, you know, we really had no time to talk about it on the air, but we knew something was going on. And when we got off the air, then things were confirmed. And we got no message from New York, our CBS people in New York, that we needed to say something. Nothing came from the truck. So we just continue with our game. Sometimes, unless these things are confirmed, you don't want to dare go near them. And we, right. we didn't. So anyway, that's how I found out. And then the drive from Bloomington back to the Indianapolis airport was pretty solemn. And it was pretty... because Jim is known about Kobe and covered Kobe and all these things over the years, like I have. So it was as reports were coming in, it got more and more quiet in our car as we were heading to catch our flights home.
You've been doing the NBA games forever, it seems like, on TNT, and I know you're the voice of the Timberwolves. What was your relationship with Kobe, if there was any there at all? I would assume there has to be something there. You've probably done so many Laker games during that time. What was your relationship like with him?
Dozens of games. In fact, I did every one of his years in the NBA, including his rookie year and the playoff series against the Utah Jazz as a rookie when he put up some shots at the end of the game that weren't close and the Lakers lose this series. And I remember this teenage kid being walked off the floor after a disappointing loss in Salt Lake City to close the series, and the Jazz would go on and the Lakers were finished, and the veterans putting their arms around Kobe as he walked off the floor. And I was thinking, you know, this kid is going to come back and get better from it. In fact, we may have even said it on the air. I'm not certain. But the point was, is that in a big moment, he was not afraid to take the shot. And that kind of was the narrative with him throughout his career. So covered dozens of his games. And then two things kind of happened toward the end of his career. Number one, in the NBA 2K video game series I do for the league and for 2K Sports, he agreed to be kind of the symbol, the focus of that year's edition. And so I flew to California, and they had a studio close to his home. And he and I sat down for about 4 hours and talked nonstop, recorded a talk that they used for that video game. It came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. I've never been more entranced with a guy talking about basketball and the nuance and the attention to detail like I was with Kobe talking about it. It was phenomenal. And I felt like, how am I lucky enough to get this guy at this stage of his career? Hall of Famer for sure, five-time champion, all this stuff, and nearing the end of his career, to have that chance to sit and talk with him. And so that was phenomenal. And then his very last year in the league, if I recollect correctly, Turner had 9 of his games his final year. And I think Reggie Miller and I, or I and me and somebody else, broadcast 8 of those. So I had 8 of his last 9 games on Turner. Mm-hmm. And he played in every one of them. Now, he didn't play in all of them his last year, but on the Turner games, he played in every single one. And in every single one, he was phenomenal.
Right.
He was great. And so then I've got a picture on my Twitter account, which I do not go to very often, but my family asked me to put up a picture of he and I talking late in his career. He came over to me as I was walking into Staples Center, and we intersected as we were walking back to the locker rooms. And I always make it a habit not to ask the guy about how he's playing or the team or anything like that, but something kind of off the beaten track. And so I'm the father of 3 daughters. He's the father of 4 daughters. And that was what I brought up to him. Hey, how's it being the daughter of all those, dad of all those daughters? And we had that. That was a conversation in that picture that was taken by Andy Bernstein out in Los Angeles before that game. So, I didn't know him well. A lot of people didn't know him well, but those were some moments that I had with him.
Do you remember your last conversation with him, last time seeing him?
Last game we did, his last Turner appearance, he looked over. He was also, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was the one doing this, but I think he filmed every moment of his last season. And so the sound crew was always around us. The sound crew that was doing this documentary on his last season was always around us. And got our the opens that we did to the games. They got any meetings we might have or him coming over to the table to say hello. And then they followed him, you know, his every step of the way, his final year in the league. And so we were caught talking about him all the time. And in the last one, as I recall, as he would do, he looked over at our table and winked. And that was kind of his thing about a nod. Of course, I'm working with Reggie Miller, who's a Hall of Famer. And right. So there was a lot of respect there on that table. But he would always look over and wink at our table. And that was the last thing I remember him he was doing in our direction.
I'm just curious about that 4-hour meeting you had with him with the NBA 2K game. Is there something he said that day, a story he told, anything? And you said it was a phenomenal conversation. I'm just wondering if there's anything specific you remember or were amazed by that day.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you on Monday, and the game is tomorrow night, and I'm going to fly out to Los Angeles tomorrow. It's Super Bowl week, so the week is already just jam-packed full of all kinds of different things. So I have to leave tomorrow morning, day of the game, which I don't like to do. But right. I was hoping I was going to get a hold of someone at 2K if they could play some snippets of that conversation. My recollection is that, I remember a lot of things. Number one, how kind he was and how patient he was with the interview. And they were using the sound to put into the game. So, I mean, we're looking at video and we're talking about subjects that they were going to, you know, plant in these different sequences in this video game. So there was a lot of structure in terms of what direction it was going, but I always had the freedom to extend the conversation if I found something he said interesting. And of course, everything he said was interesting. He doesn't miss a beat. He was so focused, and it was like this was the most important thing he could possibly be doing at that time. But I came to learn as he was talking and did subsequent, you know, research and have followed him over the years, that everything he did at that moment was the most important thing, whether it was lifting weights or shooting free throws or practicing threes or whatever, or making a presentation for business or writing a children's book or doing film. I mean, it was everything. Mm-hmm. So he attacked this, Jimmy, just like he did everything else in his life that we saw publicly and did he privately. He right. wanted to be the best dad. And we talked probably a little bit about that, and we did in that picture that was taken as we were walking in. But the thing that stands out basketball-wise that he talked about was how he thought the game through and how he saw what other guys were doing, even if he was not having them a part of the play. So if he had the ball around the circle, he may be worried about, okay, when is that guy in the corner going to cut? And where he would shoot was down to a science. It wasn't an inch off the line. It was 2 inches, or it was 4 inches, or it was a foot. I mean, like, everything was so precise. Mm. And so the attention to detail just stood out about how he constructed his game. Of course, that's how Michael was too. Michael was the same way. And if you didn't know any better, and you were just dropped here on the earth and had to take a look at the highlights of Michael Jordan and the highlights of Kobe Bryant, you would think they were one and the same with just different jerseys on. They were the same player. They were the same person. They yeah. handled things the way that they did a certain way. And that's how he did this interview that we sat down for 3.5-4 hours. Is he thought he gave thoughtful answers. He was precise in what he said. If he didn't like something he said, he'd go, "Can I say that again?" Because he knew this was all being recorded, so he would say it again right. in a way that he felt comfortable with and thought was the right way to do it, as opposed to just something he just put up there and fumbled through.
Right. Mamba mentality always, it seemed like.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So now, you know, now you get this call here to the Lakers play. It's kind of ironic. They play the Clippers, so the game's in L.A. You have both L.A. teams there at the Staples Center. Tuesday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, TNT. TNT had the game all along. This wasn't an added game after the tragedy. They just happened to have it, and now obviously the world will be watching. For yourself, what do you look at? What is your role on Tuesday night? What do you look to do in calling that game?
Well, if the situation would ever present it, I'd probably relay some of the stories in much shorter form that I've just talked to you about now, Jimmy, but probably with our whole studio out there, Ernie and Shaq, who played with him for all those years and won the championships, and Charles and Kenny, who know him and did things with him socially, did things with him on business deals, and of course on the floor. Their stories will mean far more to our listeners. And then I'm working, I think, this is still coming together here at the last second. I found out when I was flying home last night that I was going to be on this, but with Reggie and with Chris, Reggie Miller and Chris Weber, and I'm sure they will talk a lot about what they remember and all the things that were important to them about Kobe Bryant, the things that people should know about Kobe Bryant. But I guess as I look from afar and not in LA yet, I would say that I probably want that the game on its own, had this not happened, would have been a big game just mm-hmm. because of where the division is, where the conference is, what these teams mean, the two favorites. I mean, just on and on and on. It's just the star power is huge, and now it takes on a completely different dimension. So I don't know how the players are going to react. I don't know what the mood's going to be like in the arena. I guess I'm just going to kind of be an observer and try to get a feel for as much as I can, but go in thinking, all right, well, someone's got to report on this game. And I don't know if the two guys with me are or the sideline person is, who I don't know who that's going to be. But I'm assuming that someone's got to make sure that they make head or tail of this game. So there's got to be some pulse on what's going on and keeping up with that, but not getting in the way of what the main theme for the night's going to be. And that, of course, is the legacy of Kobe Bryant and the tragedy of yesterday. So yeah. It's kind of fluid right now with a lot of moving parts. I'm just kind of feeling, I've never been in a situation like this before. I mean, who has? It's right. Very rare that we have this kind of outpouring. And it has been incredible, the response in every quadrant, not only in this country, but worldwide, about Bryant and what he meant and what he accomplished and who he was. So this it's a very different kind of broadcast, obviously.
Yeah, and I wonder if the two-day gap there allows it maybe more tomorrow based on what the Lakers do. And I don't mean the Laker players. I mean the Laker franchise front office. It could be a celebration of Kobe's life and legacy. Yesterday, obviously, if you saw the highlights from the games taking place, that was not the case. Mike Breen broke down a little. Broke down might be strong. Got emotional. Got choked up. Doing Nets Knicks on Sunday. A couple of hours after it happened. Maybe the 2-day gap here now allows for more of a celebration of Kobe's legacy and a remembrance. I don't know your thoughts on that. Maybe.
Yeah, first of all, no better person to symbolize the emotion that the media may have than Mike, who I think just is the face of the league from a broadcast standpoint. He's called all these finals. He's called many of Kobe's biggest games, championship games, knew him and has covered the league as closely as any broadcaster has. So he's the perfect guy to have had that kind of response, and I think he represented the response of all of us that have to call a game that would involve the memory of Bryant. And as we all think about how he was involved with our personal careers, but Mike is kind of the flagship in terms of that. And I'm glad that his response has been the one that's been talked about, because I think that's so Mike. He's just the kindest person you'd ever come across, and everything is genuine and organic, and he's just wonderful in every regard. So I have the utmost respect for him. So I don't know how I'm sure there are many moving parts out there in Los Angeles to this and how they're going to celebrate it, what the response is going to be. And you're right, time does give you different perspective. Even waking up this morning and thinking about it, I felt differently a bit on how I was just sad and distraught. And it was such a brutal story yesterday. When you hear it, you're flying by yourself and at night, and you're looking out the window, and just you cannot wrap your mind around what is going on. And then on top of that, the family and the wife and everything else, it's just so horrible. Then you wake up this morning and you think about, I'm sure there is an incredible support group for the family. But this wife has now lost a husband and a daughter. And that family has got two members that were very important to the family now gone. And in addition to the Laker family and all the people that follow basketball in this country and worldwide, feeling like they've had something taken away. And the fact that he just retired, this is very fresh in our mind. Mm-hmm. His what he did is so indelible in our thoughts and in our memory that it's like he was almost still playing, because you still heard about him. You see, he won an Academy Award recently. He's attacking his second act in life as hard as he did playing on the floor. Yet you see these highlights, and it's like you just watched him last night with a great dunk or a great play. And so it's just a very hard thing to try to grasp. And that's what I think most of us are coming to grips with. We all handle it differently. And I'm sure some people on our set tomorrow will get very emotional, and they should. And that's great. And I think that helps everybody seeing someone that they know, that their voice and their face, and that's why it was so important, I think, that Mike maybe handled it the way he did, because it was so natural, and it conveyed the feelings of all of us. I'm sure we'll all have those same kind of feelings tomorrow. And I'm anxious to see just how the teams react. I saw Doc Rivers interviewed after the game, Jimmy, and just his response was, I mean, how couldn't you quiver yourself and get teary-eyed by seeing someone like Doc Rivers, accomplished as he is, and how heartfelt his words were. I think that's how we all kind of feel right now, and who knows how we'll react, but that it will be genuine. I would tell you that. There's no pre-plan in this. We're all just kind of going into it, just letting it take it where it takes us.
Right. This is a totally frivolous question, and it's a bizarre transition, and there's really no way to transition from something so tragic. But you are calling the Super Bowl on Sunday, and I'm just curious when were you going to fly to Miami? Is that still the same? Is your schedule still the same? And because you got this assignment now to do the game on Tuesday, how did this affect your week in terms of prep and going down to Miami for the Super Bowl?
Well, it did change it because my initial game was going to be Utah, Denver on Thursday.
Oh, okay. So you're doing a game that late in the week even. Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I was going to take a red eye after the game in Denver, fly to Miami, and then take a cab to our production meeting that Friday morning with all of our Westwood One broadcasters and reporters and engineers and all the people that are involved with it. It's over 30 people total that are involved in this. And so it's a big room, and it's a 10 a.m. meeting, and I've got to be there. And so I was going to take a red eye. And then I was going to go from there to Radio Row, which is a pretty big handful of work to do, because you're talking with, 20, 25, 30 different stations and 7-minute clips, sitting down, putting on a headset, doing a show with a station in Boston that may be there, and then you take off the headset 7 minutes later, and then you walk into a station in Los Angeles, and you take off that headset, and you walk another 50 feet, and you go do one in Detroit. So that's what that day is like. It's a blast, and you run on adrenaline, but it's tiring. It's exhausting. And the questions are kind of the same, and so you're thinking, well, have I said that already? Should I move it around? But anyway, that was going to be it. And then our family always kind of as a reward for them putting up with this NFL schedule and the two games a week, we always take our family to the Super Bowl and have a big meal on Friday and Saturday night, kind of celebrating the end of another NFL season. So I have my family down there, and that's another thing that I want to make sure that I'm ready for, and I'm certainly excited for, but it's another thing that you've got to make sure that everything is organized. So there's a lot going on during the Super Bowl weekend, and it is a very strange transition from what will be a solemn, very emotional moment Tuesday, and then trying to shift gears mentally on Wednesday, and then Thursday fly down to Miami now, and then Friday be there for the meeting and for the stations and all the things I'm going to do for Westwood One.
I'm just curious. So obviously we know you call the games every week on television for CBS, and then you do the Monday night radio Westwood One. What if any, maybe there are none, are the differences in your prep for a game, TV, radio, or is it the same?
Well, I would say the prep is pretty much the same in terms of knowing who the players are and having the mechanics down of those kinds of things. But in terms of extensive notes, and the nuance that comes with the story and the time to tell it and couple it with pictures and maybe a graphic, there's none of that. So it's more straight ahead reporting on my radio broadcast, where the most important things are knowing who the players are, who's in the game, and making sure that I've got the right words and the right tempo and the right voice for the plays that will transpire. And TV, it's more about knowing what's important to my partner, Rich Gannon, in this case at CBS, knowing what our graphics package is, knowing what kind of vignettes they may have, and knowing the feel of the game more in a very large sense, and how I can complement the pictures and take it from a kind of a different perspective, to be an assist man as opposed to being, you know, the lead voice. Radio, the purest form of broadcasting, because it's all you. It's your description. It's your words. It's your pacing. It's your tenor. Your voice. It's everything, and it's all of those things, and they've all got to be razor sharp, especially for a game as big as the Super Bowl. On television, it's a bit more of a running conversation because the picture can be seen. If a picture's worth a thousand words, you know, you're just kind of identifying a couple players during the play, and you're trying to, you know, wrap up what's happened, tell them what they don't know, and it's just a different kind of approach. Same challenge, same incredible challenge, but just a different way of handling the broadcast personally.
So those meetings you have with the players the day before, 2 days before, I guess, on radio, you're not going to be able to at least get into the stories, but are they still important in terms of maybe getting some information, maybe getting the mood of the team? Or with radio, those meetings really are not as important?
Well, they're probably not as important in terms of my prep, in terms of, because they're talking with a lot of the players and coaches this week. So Kurt will talk. He's down there for NFL Network and Westwood One.
Right.
So he's got a dual role. So he'll be meeting with a lot of those people. But what happens is normally is that the coverage of the Super Bowl is so extensive and is so great that I can sit and read 10, 15, 20 stories a day, and I think get a pretty good pulse on what's going on. Now, I saw San Francisco on a Monday night game against Seattle about, 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, and I just did the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So I feel like I know both teams fairly well going in, and because they've both been high seeds, Chiefs 2 and San Francisco 1, I knew that somewhere along the line I was going to do one of the two teams in the playoffs, and sure enough, I got the Chiefs. So I feel like I'm pretty up to date on stories.
Right.
But again, you know, as we're going along, we have so many people on the broadcast, two on the field. Kurt, Gene Steratore will be in our booth for rules interpretation. And then we've got two different hosts. We have Scott Graham, we have Jim Gray. So we've got all kinds of people that are there to offer opinion, massage a story, make sure that all the principles are out there. So if I go in, you know, with a pretty good handle on what the themes are, and the obvious theme is, you know, the Chiefs first in 50 years, the Niners first in all these years, they haven't won in 25 and coming back for the first time since 2012. I mean, just there are some pretty significant stories in place, and my job just really will be make sure your call is as accurate and as full and as detailed as possible, because every play will matter. Any play could be the play, and every play will matter
right,
to some degree.
And you've done the games. You've done two games all week, all year, every week. So, I mean, and it does feel like with CBS, you've done a bunch of Chiefs games. So there's not really much more you're going to learn about the Chiefs, I guess. Maybe the Niners, you haven't done as much. But you said you had them a few weeks ago on a Monday night against Seattle. So by this time of the season, I'm sure you got all the nuts and bolts pretty much down with those teams.
I feel I do, yeah. You know, I'll prepare this week just like I normally do in terms of watching tape and then going over my own broadcasts and making sure that I've got things that I want to improve on or tweak or whatever, because there's always a list every game. Make sure I've got those firmly in my head, and then make sure that I've got, you know, the staples that I just think are my the main things that I want to make sure that I work on. So it's a lot of people can't get by a TV, and so there are millions, and they project, I think, over 25 million that will watch, that will listen to the broadcast worldwide, and so that's a pretty significant number.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually going to ask that in a minute. You know, the Super Bowl in this country is a holiday, basically. Parties, everyone together, everyone in front of a television, it seems like. I'm curious what you hear from people. You know, especially, you know, someone like me, I'm in my sports bubble. So we, you know, every single person I know is at a Super Bowl party on Sunday and everyone's watching the game. But there are the people that cannot get in front of a television. I'm curious what you hear from fans, people, about listening to the Super Bowl on the radio, who those people are, what they say to you, if you get that interaction from people, because it seems so foreign that someone would listen to the Super Bowl on radio, but you just said 25 million people worldwide. Do you have a grasp of what that audience is, or who, you know, we hear from fans about it?
Well, you hear from, I've heard from soldiers overseas that have been in a fairly remote part of the world that have tuned into Voice of America, or some way they've had a feed through whatever channel to them out in the field. And I've heard from people that are driving trucks that will be on I-70 in the middle of the country and cannot get to a television set because they're driving, but they'll listen. I hear a lot. This is the most interesting to me is at the Super Bowl, they hand out free headsets in the press box, little earbuds, so that the media can listen to the TV broadcast. They can listen to home radio, away radio, or our radio broadcast.
Right.
And I have heard from a lot of people that cover the game that they will listen to our radio broadcast, and they'll say something about that. And I always think, so what I think, here's what I think about. I think about like Peter King or Jimmy Trina or someone like that that may be in the press box, and they're watching the game as we're broadcasting it in real time. And I want to make sure that these people that know broadcasting and know radio and know the NFL are getting the full-bodied report on what's going on. So that's a challenge. And I, not that I look for things to prop me up, and I don't think about the $25 million, to be quite honest, or the soldier that may be in a remote part of the world, or someone at sea, because we broadcast to 175 ships at sea. I don't think about that as much as I think about my peers in that press box listening to our broadcast. And the people in the stands can buy, I think, buy the earbuds for, I don't know how much it is, but they can buy them. My wife does. And then Jimmy, they play the highlight of the previous scoring play in the stadium with our call.
Wow, okay. I never knew that.
So, wow. Well, I know it. Yeah. And I didn't know it either until my wife said, oh, yeah, we heard it in the stadium. What are you talking about? He goes, yeah, we went to the bathroom, and we heard it in the bathroom. And I said, and you did? And he goes, yeah. And then they play it in the stadium. They play the highlight in the stadium after what's happened. I go, you got to be kidding me. So that, I think, more immediate about the people that are there and them listening and making sure that I stay on my game. And it's not hard to keep your focus in something like that. When you've got your peers there and there's so much riding on it, and all the people that have sold it for Westwood One and producing it for Westwood One and the national scope and the importance of the game and how these plays will live in history. We'll hear a touchdown pass by Mahomes or Garoppolo. We'll hear that for years to come. And I want to make sure that my call is as good as it possibly can be.
Had no idea they played that inside the stadium. That's pretty cool.
I didn't either.
Yeah, that's great. And I would hope they would not charge your wife for the earbuds. I mean, can the wife of the play-by-play guy get free earbuds for Pete's sake?
If there are some extra in the booth, somebody from Westwood One may go out to the stands and bring her some earbuds. But if not, she's bought them, I think, in the past. And I've never even thought of that, but I do know there are a lot of people that do listen in the stands,
right?
And so that's a great challenge to make sure that what they're seeing matches what I'm saying. I love that challenge, and that's what kind of drives you on special moments like this when, for us as broadcasters, the stakes are so high in such a big important game.
If Wikipedia is accurate, and that's always a big if, this is your 10th consecutive Super Bowl on radio. Do you get nervous, butterflies, more juiced up? You seem, my perspective on it is week 6 CBS Raiders Broncos or a playoff game, we get the same Kevin Harlan all the time. I'm curious what your take on that is as someone who's now on this 10th Super Bowl on for Westwood One.
Yes, I kind of treat every game the same, to be quite honest, and I treat the Super Bowl the same as I would a game in the middle of the season. And I guess the best advice I ever got, and I even forget now who told me this, is they say, you know, it's just a football game. You've done a lot of football games. This is a football game that will not look any different. Now, the stakes may be higher and the visibility is much greater, but it's a football game at the end of the day, and I do tell myself that. From the very first one I did in Dallas to this one I'll do this weekend in Miami. To be quite honest, going into it, the bigger thing for me, because it's historical in nature, is that this is the 10th consecutive Super Bowl that I've broadcast, and no broadcaster in radio or television has broadcast 10 in a row. Jack Buck and I are tied at number 9, the late, great Jack Buck, who I listened to growing up in St. Louis on KMOX Radio. And then afterwards at CBS and NBC. But I will I hate to say pass him, because no one can ever pass him, but right. In terms of 10 consecutive, no broadcaster has ever done 10, play-by-play has done 10 in a row. Boomer Esiason did 17 straight, I believe.
Oh, wow.
But I have done 10 play-by-play in a row, and no right. one's ever done that. And so I'm it's an honor to sit in that same chair that a Jack Buck sat in or a Jim Simpson sat in. You know, over the years, great announcers have broadcast this game, and just to be in that list is such an honor, and I never take it lightly. And we'll think about that when I put that headset on, thinking how lucky, how blessed am I to be here getting a chance to do this and do it for a 10th consecutive time in a business which is pretty fluid with no certainty, and you hope that you hope and pray that you can do it again sometime, but never know. And yeah. So to do 10 in a row is for me a big deal.
Yeah. It is a big deal, and before I let you go, I have to ask, obviously. I mean, we've had the Kevin Harlan guy running on the field call. We had the Black Cat, and now the legend grew at the end of the season in Week 17 when you called two games at once there for a minute with the you were in Kansas City, ironically enough, as you get ready to call the Chiefs and Niners in the Super Bowl. You were in Kansas City, and you started giving everyone the play-by-play of the Dolphins-Patriots game, which so the Patriots beat the Dolphins beat the Patriots and put them on the road for a play. They lost them out on a bye week, and then obviously lost to the Titans. So it was a significant loss, which you captured. I would imagine, and I don't. I'm not saying this because I want it to be this way. It's the opposite. I would want something like this, but I would imagine on Super Bowl Sunday, Kevin Harlan probably will play it straight and not give us anything like those three things if something crazy happens.
Well, I mean, like if a hang glider comes through the opening.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything. The security is so different.
Yeah.
And but those things all happen organically. I mean, you don't plan for a cat, you don't plan for a drunk, you don't plan for to happen what happened in Kansas City, and so and any broadcaster would call any of those three things, to be quite honest. They all could have said it, can say it. So it just happened, and they were involved in a play. But I think that I'll go into it like I do every game. I'll be prepared. I'll feel comfortable. I'll try to be as relaxed as possible and call the best game that I can. But those moments have been kind of fun. I don't, you know, when the call in the two games at once, my biggest concern was I'm really kind of stepping outside of CBS protocol here, because the protocol was that the studio in New York updates everything.
Right.
And so it really, but I didn't think about that when I said it, when I was watching the game on another monitor, and the timing and the sequence of things happening. Chiefs score, Fitzpatrick scores, there were double-digit underdog in New England. How in the world can the Patriots be losing a game and losing a bye weekend? And here are the Chiefs in a hotly contested game against the Chargers, a close game until late, and one team scores, the other team's, and then the crowd, and then the crowd cheered like at the right time to kind of tie up that little story so well. And that was the work of all of the men and women at CBS that are on our crew. But it was, I would like to think that anybody would have done that. But at the end of the game, as I was going down the elevator to go to the car, I thought, I wonder if New York wanted to update that game. And I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did want to.
But I do feel like all the rules sort of go out the window in Week 17. Everything is sort of crazy that week.
Maybe. You're right. And I did get, as a postscript, I got some very, very kind and most appreciated text from my bosses in New York after it happened, shortly after it happened. So my mind was fine with it. But I guess had I really thought about it, I'd say, no, it's protocol that I go to New York and we should do that. And I didn't do it.
But Week 17, you get away with it. And I'm sure CBS was, you said it much earlier in this podcast, you're not one who checks Twitter often, but I can tell you that was a enormous, enormous Twitter moment. So I'm sure CBS was happy with that.
Well, my daughters told me I don't look at it, and I did post I was in Bloomington yesterday and posted a picture of two guys who've been broadcasting college sports for a long time. Don Fisher, who's been the voice of Indiana for 47 years, and Johnny Halliday, who does Maryland and has done Maryland for 41 years. And I've just respected those guys, listened to them my whole career, my whole life, and I wanted to get a picture with them. And I wanted to put it up there because I just have such appreciation for what these men have meant to our business. So I did put that picture up there, and sure, I've never put two in a row, and I don't look at it, and I hit that thing quickly and got off it. I don't like to look at what people say. Vern Lundquist, I don't know if I told you this before, Vern Lundquist said, you know, I thought I was riding along real nicely, and then someone showed me Twitter, and I got on Twitter, and I started reading what they were saying about me, and my heart was broken. And when I heard those words come out of his mouth, a Hall of Fame guy like Vern, I said, there's no way I'm looking at that stuff. And I tell my kids not to do it, but they do keep track if something is needed that I need to address. And my family was kind of telling me, put a picture of you and Kobe up on your page. And so I did, and I quickly got off, and I'm not sure how it's been received, but anyway,
well,
I did.
I've said on this podcast a million times, I've said it to play-by-play people. I've had conversations with Joe Buck, Jim Nance. Me personally, I don't think any play-by-play person should be on Twitter because it's just a disaster if you check it. But in your situation, you're pretty beloved, so you could get away with it. But even in your case, I would say don't do it. Stay away from it. You don't need it. But I can, as someone who's
good advice,
as someone who unfortunately is on there all day long, I can tell you, you're pretty beloved on there. You get the flack way less than other people.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And you know, we're all just trying to do the best we can. And I think I've told you this. I don't care who wins.
Right.
Even though I did the Chiefs and we live in Kansas City, I do not care. All I care about is that we have a good broadcast. I would never want to think one second that people think that I'm favoring one team or the other. I do not care. So I just hope for a good broadcast for Westwood One and all the people that have put all the time and effort into making this broadcast what it is.
Last question here, and I know you don't root for who wins. I know you don't care who's there. You're there to call the game. I get that, but I'm just curious because I touched on this last week a little bit with Brent Musburger, and I think I even mentioned it to Kurt Menefee, who was on 2 weeks ago. We don't have the Patriots here, which is rare these days. Do you think that's good, bad, in terms of, you know, fans like to have a villain to root for or a team to root against? But new faces are always good. I think, listen, if America hasn't already, they're way behind the times. But I think on Sunday they're going to fall in love with Patrick Mahomes. I don't think there's a more exciting player to watch, in my opinion. But I'm just curious about, as a broadcaster, the Patriot absence, what you think about it.
Well, I knew this. Every time I was doing a Brady and Belichick game, I was talking about guys that we'll be talking about for the rest of eternity in terms of what they've meant to pro football. So every time I called a Brady game and a Belichick game, I always felt like these are the guys that they'll be talking about in 50 years and 100 years from now, as you might talk about Lombardi and Halas now, for instance. I just think they're that important to the history of pro football. So I thought every time I did one of their games, it was an honor. And I still feel that way. It's an honor to call people that are that accomplished and have done that much in pro football, won that much, and done it so consistently every year for over 2 decades. It's a shocking string of success. And so when they were in it, and I get people want the villain and everything, but there are just as many people that love the excellence of Brady and loved how Belichick was able to get the most out of a roster that no one really has even heard of. And those are things that I think we'll appreciate them much more because what they've done is so historic. Mm-hmm. But listen, this Mahomes, I can't think of another quarterback. The only other arm that was like this was a younger arm of Aaron Rodgers. And you think he's almost double jointed the way he throws.
Yeah.
Different ways he throws and everything. I think people, I agree with you. I think people, if you don't know about him, you're going to love his kind of Brett Favre-esque feel and approach to the game and never saying die and taking plays off schedule and making him his own. And I just think he's a generational talent. And I think that I think people are really going to appreciate him.
I agree. And I thank you for coming on in this crazy busy week and the fact that you didn't cancel after getting the assignment to call the Lakers Tuesday is I think says a lot about you, and I appreciate it. So good luck calling Clippers Lakers on Tuesday, and good luck with the Super Bowl on Sunday. And we'll all be watching both and listening to both. So thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy. And like I said, as I started, I follow you religiously. I'm a fan, and it's really nice to be on with you. Thank you for asking. I sure appreciate it, and hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Anytime. Thank you, Kevin. Take care. All right, my thanks to Kevin Harlan. Appreciate him coming on there in this very, very busy and interesting week he's got ahead of himself, calling the Lakers' first game after the tragic death of Kobe Bryant, and then he's got the Super Bowl on Sunday, February 2nd for Westwood One Radio, so appreciate him coming on during this busy time. In the archives, last week we had Brent Musburger and Chris Long on the podcast. Brent talked about the Super Bowl, got into some betting stuff, shared some very amusing stories. Chris Long and I discussed the Aaron Hernandez doc on Netflix. 2 weeks ago, Kurt Metafee was on the podcast. So check those out and subscribe to the podcast. If you are not already a subscriber, it helps tremendously and it is greatly appreciated. And a review also helps, if you don't mind, on iTunes. All right, that wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. We'll see you next week. Take care.